We've been with all of you before, haven't we? I can remember. It was a lovely evening. Part two. Different topic. This is prayer, Power of Prayers, part two. This is on the topic of Dhruva Maharaj. And I'm sure you know something about Dhruva Maharaj. Do you know something about Dhruva Maharaj? Not at all? You know who is Krishna, right? Okay. The first born living being from Krishna in this world is Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma, first born living being. And amongst the offspring of Lord Brahma was the first of the Manus, the givers of law for mankind. His name was Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu. Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu had two sons. One of them was Dhruva's father, and three daughters. His father's name was Uttanapada. And Uttanapada had two queens. And one of the queens was very nasty. She was younger, more charming, and had captured the attention of the king. So the first queen, who was the mother of Dhruva, was kind of neglected, more than neglected. She was just like not even in the palace anymore. And the stepmother, the nasty one, she insulted Dhruva really bad. She said some really mean things. And the father said nothing because if he said something, maybe his favorite queen would not like it. So he just was silent right in front of Dhruva. She insulted him very badly. Little boy, 5 years old. 5 years old. Little boy. So he left, went to his mother, Mommy! And she said, I can't help you. But you're a Kshatriya-spirited little boy. You want not just your father's kingdom when you grow up, but you want a kingdom better than your father and better than your father's father and better than your father's father's father, you little boy. I'll show them I'll get a really big kingdom. So to fulfill what you want, you have to go to Vishnu. You know who is Vishnu, right? Vishnu. So he said, great, how do I find Vishnu? She said, I'm just a lady in the palace. I don't know too much about these things, but sages, they go to the forest and somehow they find Vishnu. Little 5-year-old boy, I'm going to the forest. So off she went. He went. He didn't find Vishnu. He found lots of trees and birds and animals and bugs and things, but he didn't find Vishnu. But Narada came. And he gave him the bhakti process. Now this was in a previous age where people lived a really, really long time. They could do amazing things. So Dhruva, that's what Dhruva did. He followed the bhakti process. Little boy. And he got a mantra. You know what a mantra is, right? Mantra. We were just singing the Hare Krishna mantra. That's a mantra. So his mantra was, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Let's say it together. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. One more time. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. That was his mantra. And he did a type of yoga that was worked in that, you know, long ago, that age. And he perfected the yoga process in 6 months. Perfect. Lord Vishnu came, touched him on the forehead with his conch shell because Dhruva wanted to say some nice prayers But he's a little boy, and he was really perplexed by that situation. And so the Lord, by touching him on the forehead, his body became completely spiritualized. Totally, like, ecstatic. And he began offering prayers. So that's where we were last night. He offered some prayers, appreciating the benefit of the touch of the Lord and spiritualizing his senses. He then spoke with great humility. First gratitude, then humility. Humility like, I wanted something material. I wanted a kingdom. I wanted a big kingdom. I wanted the biggest kingdom. What a fool. Because you, Lord Vishnu, you fulfill all desires, including even liberation from material existence. And I wanted a big chunk of material existence. How foolish. But you're very kind. You took away that material desire by your kindness. So now we're continuing, part two. The subtitle is Shifting the Fulcrum of Our Consciousness. We had a little illustration about that yesterday. So starting down in the lower left, Dhruva was thinking about himself, and he wanted to go way up there to it's all about Krishna. And it's a big distance between it's all about me till it's all about Krishna. So how did he get there? Or for us, how can we get there? And there's a big gap between where we are, where we want to be, and what are we doing to get to where we want to be? And what are the opportunities that we have that we may be touched, like Dhruva was touched? So the part of the purpose of this whole discussion is to contemplate not just, wow, Dhruva is really an amazing personality, but what lessons can we learn and what ways can we apply the lessons that we learned by hearing about the story of Dhruva? So we're going to continue verses 11 and 12, and because the association of devotees will help us start the path of bhakti and keep us in the path of bhakti. That's what these prayers say. How did he start bhakti, Dhruva? He started through his mother. His mother was a very special person. She was like supermom. You know, there's mothers, and then there's Dhruva's mother. She was really special. And then from his mother, he got Narada's association. So now he wants ongoing association, because now that I've begun bhakti, I want to be able to stay for the rest of my life. So here's some images of what devotee association looks like. And the one in the upper right-hand corner, that's Lord Chaitanya's tree and the various branches of the Lord Chaitanya tree. And as those branches are filled with devotees. So those other images are things that devotees do when they get together and associate with one another. Okay, so there's the verse, and here's the translation. Bhakti muhu pravahatam twayi me prasango sangha prasanga me prasanga. He compares the association of devotees to be like a river. Dhruva continued, "Oh, unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with bhaktim mahu pravahatam twayi. Great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly as the waves of a river constantly flow." So one who is properly engaged in devotional service, it's not interrupted, or sometimes it's a constant flow just like a river. And I like that image. It looks like some places where I've been. And rivers that when they're strong, they keep flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing and flowing. So as rivers don't stop flowing, so also the type of devotional service that fixed devotees engage in continues uninterruptedly. Me prasango bhuyad ananta mahatam. Such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. That's their consciousness. The original consciousness of the soul is pure. And with purification, we can also become pure, because that's our original consciousness. And to associate with such persons is how you stay in such consciousness. One of our acharyas pictured here, his name is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who writes, "Bhakti, composed of hearing and chanting, will not be sweet without proper association. Therefore, Dhruva prays for the association of those who continually perform bhakti." Pravahatam. They continually perform bhakti. Then, well, here's a doubt. But then, he will have the same fear of the ocean of suffering caused by samsara. He's doing devotes, this devotee is doing nice devotional service, but won't there be a lingering fear of repeated birth and death? And raising his hands in pride, Dhruva speaks this verse, that this, the waves, like the waves of a river or the waves of an ocean, I will overpower the terrible ocean of material life, full of countless pains, by the strength of that association. Let it come before me. Let us see. Nothing is impossible for me. He has a lot of confidence because of good association. I will be drunk with tasting the nectar of your qualities and pastimes, the qualities of material life, such as rivalry, ignorance, and hatred, cannot make this drunkard suffer. Even death cannot touch the person who has drunk the immortal nectar. By bhakti produced from association with devotees, one directly meets the Lord. Then, one again prays for association with devotees. He met the Lord, and now he's still wanting devotee association. He's greedy, but he's also smart, and he wants to stay fixed in that position. So the commentary reads, this indicates that bhakti, in the form of association with devotees, is the cause of bhakti, and bhakti is the result of bhakti. Thus, this verse states the opinion of the devotees. It's a nice verse. This is, throughout the Bhagavatam, we get teachings about devotional service. In the beginning, the middle, the end, and in between. So it's natural that's there, because his stepmother said, the nasty one, if you want to sit on your father's lap or sit on the throne, you're going to have to get the mercy of Vishnu. His mother said, what she said was done in a nasty way, but what she said is right. Take shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. And she describes his lotus feet very beautifully. She was a great devotee. She's emphasizing bhakti. He met Narada. Narada said, what your mother said is right. You're a suitable candidate for bhakti. Here's how you do it. So he has deep faith in bhakti. for that bhakti process, he met the Supreme Lord face to face. An association of devotees, of bhaktas, is necessary. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nescient ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing fire-like dangers. Now, oceans are usually not used as a metaphor as having blazing fire-like dangers. I mean, water puts out fire usually, but it's a metaphor. And fire-like dangers, it can be very, very serious. There's a forest fire, and I wouldn't want to be even close to that. The heat and the life is, every form of life is at risk when there's a forest fire. Material existence can be very, very dangerous. This verse we just looked at is discussed in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. There you see the cover of one of the volumes. It's a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's really beautiful. The painting that you see in the upper left corner, that's a little boy. He's also 5 years old. He's a cowherd boy named Gopa Kumar. And he gets mantra and he eventually reaches the spiritual world. It's a very, very interesting, very, very interesting commentary on the Bhagavatam. So when this verse is spoken about, here's what Sanatana Goswami writes. Because the devotees of Vishnu serve him constantly, the verse says, bhaktim muhu pravahatam, their hearts are completely pure, amalashayanam, and for that reason, they are exalted souls, mahatam. The association of such devotees is extremely desirable. That's paraphrasing the verse and his commentary. He writes, Dhruva anticipates that in the company of Vaishnavas, he will drink the nectar of topics about the Supreme Lord, which will intoxicate him and empower him to cross effortlessly the dangerous ocean of samsara. Sanatana Goswami. Do you all know who is Sanatana Goswami? Should I tell you who is should remind you who is Sanatana Goswami? Yes? Okay. You know who is Krishna because we already asked you. You know who is Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya is Krishna himself, who appeared after Krishna's departure to teach the way of devotional service, because the conclusion of the teaching of Bhagavad Gita is devotional service. Maybe some of you know the verse. If you do, you can say it with me. Sarvadharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishyami ma sujaha. Do it again. Sarvadharmam parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. The first part. All other dharmas or duties or obligations, religious obligations in life, they're prityaja. They're subordinate to one thing. Mam ekam sharanam. Mam, me alone. Sharanam, surrender. Take shelter of Krishna. That's the fruit and the leading principle, governing principle of all other dharmas. The other dharmas are subordinate to that one principle. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is teaching, surrender to me. But after Krishna departed, he was wondering, this next yuga is very bad. Kali Yuga is very bad. People aren't going to know how to do that. So they're going to need a good example, someone to teach them. So I could send somebody, but I'll go myself. He came himself as Lord Chaitanya, and one of the chief associates of Lord Chaitanya was Sanatana Goswami. He lived in Vrindavan along with many altars you can see on the altars in temples or in homes, along with some picture of Krishna and Prabhupada, maybe the disciplic succession before Prabhupada. You'll see also a little picture. It has the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Sanatana Goswami is the chief amongst them. So he wrote this commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam. It's really fantastic. And here's his explanation. Well, someone may doubt, because of the presence of identity with me and mine, it's difficult to avoid disturbances. The material consciousness is made up of these two, aham and mama. False ego, aham. And from false ego comes mine, I and mine. And then there's another I and mine over there, another I and mine over there, and they bump into each other. They have conflicts. Individuals and groups of individuals, even within families and communities, and groupism is a big thing. This group and that group, and they clash. They fight. They quarrel. So as long as the point is, as long as there's I and mine consciousness, it's difficult to avoid disturbances. It's nice to talk about the, you know, the ocean of material difficulties you can cross beyond it, but how do you do it when you got this I and mine thing going on? So Prahlad understands that, and therefore he's asking for association with pure devotees. By that association, one can release oneself from the I and mine conceptions of life, material conceptions of life. Look at that. That's the next verse. Yea, tu, abjanabha, O Lord who has a lotus navel. This is Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. From his navel comes a stem, a lotus flower, and Brahma is born on the top of that lotus flower. O Lord who has a lotus navel, if a person happens to associate with the devotee, whose heart always hankers after your lotus feet, seeking their fragrance, Sau Gandhya. Gandhya means fragrance. Sau Gandhya. Always seeking their fragrance. So there are some devotees at the feet of Krishna that has, we can't smell from the picture, but he has fragrance. Very wonderful fragrance. And they're paying their respects at Krishna's feet. So if you can associate with devotees who are always hankering after his lotus feet, he is, that such a person is never attached to the material body or in a bodily relationship to offspring, friends, home, wealth, and wife, which are very dear to materialistic persons. Now there's a nice devotee family having nice sankirtan together. Even the little boy, he looks really happy. And the deities in the sky, they're enjoying also the sankirtan. So families do family activities together, but the attachment of transcendence is primarily going to the Supreme, and in that primary attraction to the Supreme, then there isn't unnecessary or ordinate or the type of attachment that covers spiritual consciousness. Association of devotees who are attached to the fragrance of the lotus feet of the Lord, pictured in the lower left, that's the four Kumaras. Four Kumaras were the first sons of Brahma. They were attached to the Lord's lotus feet. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, one of our acharyas, he writes, according to Sridhar Swami, the word tu indicates that these great souls, by fixing themselves in yoga, have given up identification with the body, I and mine. This is the nature of devotee, since he is nishkama, Nishkama means without material desire. Kama means desire. Nishkama means without material desire. They have desire. They have spiritual desire. And the stronger and the stronger and stronger spiritual desire, separate desires just diminish. These wise souls who understand how Krishna, your Maya, deludes all human beings, render potent loving service to you for the source of liberation from birth and death. In other words, find that association because you'll get spiritual strength from that association. Jarayati Yashu Ya Kosham Nir Girnam Analo Yata. This is from Canto 3, Chapter 25. This is Kapila Dev's teachings about devotional service. Kapila Dev is an incarnation of Krishna. He taught Sankhya philosophy to his mother Devahuti. Devahuti, turns out, is the sister of Dhruva's father. They're the same father. Dhruva's father is Uttanapada. Uttanapada and Devahuti were brother and sister. And Kapila Dev is her son. So, Kapila Dev says, bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. Did you know that? We struggle sometimes with our mind, right? Sometimes. And sometimes we struggle with false ego. False ego. Sometimes. So who wins the struggle? Generally the mind wins, or for false ego wins. So what do you do? Because the enemy is very formidable. And the answer is bhakti. Bhakti has the power not just so you win the battle, but it can dissolve the mind, the material mind, material intelligence, and false ego. Poof. It's like an Alka-Seltzer advertisement. Maybe you don't see that these days. When I was a kid growing up, it was like there's a glass of water. They show a tablet, and they put the tablet in the glass of water, and the tablet's gone. It dissolves in the glass of water. Alka-Seltzer. So bhakti dissolves, it dissolves the subtle body, the material covering of the soul. You still have a gross body, but the gross body becomes spiritualized and the subtle body becomes dissolved. That's how it happens. The difficulties of material existence are taken care of by the bhakti process itself. That's good news, I'll tell you. It's good news. There's hope for us. So Vishwanath continues, these wise souls who understand your Maya, how your Maya deludes all human beings, they render potent loving service to you for the source of liberation and birth. That's the previous slide. And Dhruva understands this. Now Vishwanath wonders, wait a minute. If that's so, Dhruva, then you know all this already. Then why did you worship the Lord with the desire for position greater than that attained by your forefathers? Why do you still have all this material desire thing going on? And Dhruva's reply, I simply pray to have the association of your devotees because they helped me go beyond my material conceptions. I want their association. Going forward in time, I don't want to relapse back into material desires, please. There are different types of practitioners of the yoga process. Gyanis, they gradually become attached to knowing knowledge and in that way reaching transcendence. Yogis, they become attached to their yoga practice and to mystic powers. Bhaktas become attached to Krishna. That's pretty simple. So that's this. It's all about me can change so it's all about Krishna. That's the bhakti process. So not just about knowledge or not just about mystic powers, but Krishna. And Krishna takes one to the place where the material coverings of the soul, the subtle body dissolve. Okay, we have a lot of material to cover, so I'm going to keep going quickly. So what should our prayer be? Well, see the reality beyond the illusion. And through the process of being connected through the bhakti process. So let's do a little exercise in this room that's coming up right now. Think of some incidents, more than one if you can, where you had some blocks in your heart or something you knew wasn't very good, some unfavorable tendency, some bad thought, some negative feeling, negative emotion, something like that. And think about what it was, what was going on at that time in the past, something, blocks in your heart. And then, have you shared this with someone that you had confidence in? Someone that's helping you in your spiritual life particularly? And then, when you shared it, what happened? What did you feel? Did you feel understood? Did you feel some relief? Did you feel something? And when that was going on, what was that experience like? And now sometimes later, looking back on that, what did you think? What do you think today about that something? Now, what's recommended, and this is very powerful, but I don't know if I can both cover all the material and do what is being suggested here. Let's do it anyways. Because you're a group, you're all friends, you all know each other. Take a little bit of time, particularly the five ladies over there, and six ladies, and sit in a group of two or three and go through this. Let's take a few minutes. You follow? The idea is to take the message of what Dhruva is praying, saying, and bring it inside. So it'll stay there. Through your practical experience. You can share with whomever you like. And you mark it, set, go.
I'm going to go to the next one. I got really scared by the prayer idea of after I did that. We get to know like what I have to do. Like, what do you like? So many attachments going on here.
It's nice to spend more time on this. Maybe what we can do is when your group gets together, you can take the exercise and do it within your group next time. Okay? Now, Dhruva has spoken about the value or the merit of devotee association to sustain the strength of the bhakti process. Next, Dhruva is going to speak about the personal feature of Vishnu, the personality of Godhead. 13, 14, 15, 16 is a little different, and then 17. So we're going to cover, those are our upcoming verses. So we have a ways to go. Dhruva's considering, before I thought that this material universe was everything. Most of us do. Now that I have seen your transcendental form, I know that you are everything. Nice, huh? There's the verse, text 13. Here's some nice graphics. My dear Lord, O Supreme Unborn, I know that the different varieties of living entities, such as animals, trees, birds, reptiles, demigods, and human beings, are spread throughout the universe, which is caused by the total material energy. And I know that they are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. Now watch carefully. The Lord is going to appear. But I had never before experienced a supreme form. I behold as I see you now. Now all kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. Notice Dhruva is paying obeisances at his feet. Most people think this is it. This is the place where we are. That's all in all. And the Supreme Lord is obscured. But now Dhruva understands differently. Dhruva Maharaj here compares his previous state of worldly understanding with his newly awakened perfection of understanding arising due to the presence of the Supreme Lord. The position of a living entity to render is to render service unless he comes to the stage of appreciating the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He engages in the limited service of the various forms of trees, reptiles, animals, men, and demigods. It's a nice image. The light went on. Now I know that the Lord's transcendental personal form is above this universal form. That's the picture in the back of the universal form, by the way. And for one who knows his personal form, nothing further remains to be known. So he had become angry, Dhruva had become angry with his stepmother because he was deprived of something material, sitting on the throne, and sitting on his father's lap. So he wanted to acquire something material. I'll get a better kingdom than my father, and better than my father's father, and better than my father's father's father. Kshatriya spirited little boy. But now he's completely on the other side of such a desire. There's the text 14, again speaking of the form of the Lord. My dear Lord, at the end of each millennium, or which is a day of Brahma or Kalpa, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Garbho Dakshai Vishnu, dissolves everything manifested within the universe into his belly. He lies down in the lap of Sheshanag. From his navel sprouts a golden lotus flower on a stem. And on that lotus, Lord Brahma is created. I can understand that you are the same Supreme Godhead. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So he's, Lord Vishnu has come before him, riding on the back of Garuda, and he's offering these prayers, and he's describing things that little five-year-old boys hardly even have a clue about. But, you know, from the very, very beginning of the universe, there's Garbho Dakshai Vishnu, who holds within him all the living entities that eventually become, fill up the universe. And he's one of them. So now, here's a little history of how this, at the end of each day of Brahma, at the end of each day of Brahma, there's a partial annihilation. Partial annihilation means that some of the planets, the uppermost planets remain, and from the heavenly planets down, they're engulfed in water. But before they're engulfed in water, there's a big fire. And before there's a big fire, everything gets dry. There's a drought. It goes in stages. No rain. Everything's like tinder. Then fire from the mouths of Sankarshan at the bottom of the universe. Really hot. Everything's burning up. And then inundation of water. Everything gets dissolved. For a long time, for his whole night. And then the water subsides. And it's the Brahma's morning. And then again, he begins recreating the bottom planetary systems through up to the heavenly planets. That's each day of Brahma, all that happens, then his night. So here's a verse from the Bhagavatam. It is said that the blazing fire from the mouth of Sankarshan rages for 100 years of the demigods, or 36,000 human years. Then for another 36,000 years, there are torrents of rain accompanied by violent winds and waves, and the seas and oceans overflow. These reactions of 72,000 years are the beginning of the partial devastation of the three worlds. Bhu, Bhuvar, and Swargaloka, and the other lower planets below. That's the partial devastation. Okay, so there are three Vishnu forms. You with me? Three Vishnu forms? Mahavishnu, Garbho Dakshai Vishnu, Shiro Dakshai Vishnu. See, he spoke first about Garbho Dakshai Vishnu. next he's going to speak about the first one, Mahavishnu, and then he's going to speak about Paramatma. In the image here, that's Paramatma, the Lord of the heart. Dhruva is now able to understand all three of these Vishnus are one entity, and that one entity is standing before him. He's only 5 years old. He didn't even go to school yet. But he's got all Vedic knowledge. He's a fully realized little boy. Pretty amazing. And he's saying directly to Lord Vishnu, you are Garbhadakshay Vishnu, the first of the three Vishnus is Shiradakshay Vishnu. That's the one standing before him because he was previously in his heart. But he's also Garbhadakshay Vishnu, that was already mentioned. And now here's Mahavishnu. This is a verse from Brahma Samhita. When you become a little more familiar with there's rituals and yagyas and things, we generally recite Brahma Samhita prayers. And that there's this first one. Yes, yaika nishvasita kala matavalambya jivanti loma vidajagadandanata Vishnur Mahan. This Mahavishnu. Sahiha yasya kala vishesho govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami. That's Mahavishnu. And he's generating all the universes. Jagadanda Nata. He's the Lord of all the Jagadandas, the universes. Then at the end of each day of Brahma, when all the material worlds are dissolved, everything enters into the body of Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who is lying in the lap of Sheshanag, another form of the Lord. So he's giving us a picture of the Purusha avatars, the forms of Vishnu that are involved with creation. And he's seeing Lord Vishnu before him. And he is feeling very repentant that I had this really petty desire of something material from you. Now, how can you know about that which existed before you existed? Well, you can't. Unless it's disclosed to you from that which existed before you existed, then you can know. So this Shiradakshay Vishnu, who's standing before Dhruva, existed before Dhruva was born. So Dhruva is understanding these things because he's enlightened by Lord Vishnu to understand these things. He's just saying back what Lord Vishnu imparted within his heart. This is stated in the Upanishads, Mundaka Upanishad. Knowledge received through the transcendental causeless mercy of the Lord is so perfect that... By that knowledge, a devotee becomes acquainted with all the different manifestations of the Lord. That's a translation from the Upanishads. Okay. Now Vishnu might say to Dhruva, how am I different from the jivas if I also go to sleep? Dhruva's answer, Vishnu's activities such as sleeping are actions of his spiritual potency, his chit potency. You're not like the jivas. You're totally different. There's no comparison. And that's what text 15 says. And I'm looking at the clock. It's already 7:30. We're going for an hour and I'm not done yet. So I'll try to hurry up. Although it's a little delicate, all this subject matter. Here's verse 15. How the living entity and Lord Vishnu are different. That's this verse. Tum Nitya Mukta. You are eternally liberated, not by the mercy of anyone or anything. You are eternally liberated. Nitya Mukta. Tom Nitya Mukta. Parishuddha Vibodha Atma. The Jiva is Ashuddha. You are Parishuddha, full of knowledge, while the Jiva is full of ignorance. You are the Supreme Soul. Kutastha Adipurusho Bhagavans. Kutastha, you are changeless. You're the original person. You, Vishnu, are Swayam Bhagavan. There is no other Bhagavan within the Jiva category. Tri Adishaha, you're the controller of the three modes. The Jiva is controlled by the three modes. Drashta, Stitao, Adimako, Vratirikta, Ase. As Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe, and you stand aloof, and are the enjoyer of all sacrifices. That's just verses, expressions within this verse. So here's the translation put together. My Lord, by your unbroken transcendental glance, you are the supreme witness of all stages of intellectual activities. You are eternal liberated. Your existence is situated in pure goodness, and you are existent in the super soul without change. You are the original personality Godhead, full with six opulences, and you are eternally the master of the three modes of material nature. Thus, you are always different from the ordinary living entities. As Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe, and yet you stand aloof and are the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. Now, this is a very essential teaching for Vaishnavas. There's in Padma Purana estate, there are four disciplic successions coming from the Supreme Lord through Sri, the Sri Sampradaya, Lakshmi, from Lord Brahma, the Brahma Sampradaya, from the four Kumaras, the Kumara Sampradaya, it's stated in Padma Purana, and for Lord Shiva, the Rudra Sampradaya. And today those same four Sampradayas exist, and they all share this same understanding. The living entity and the Supreme Lord are distinct, and the relationship between the two is one is the master, transcendental in all circumstances, and the other is eternally the servant. And there are grades of consciousness depending upon how strong that connection with the Supreme Lord is. It's a very essential truth that Dhruva is realizing. Now, in the midst of describing the form and qualities of the personality of Godhead, there's this text 16 that's kind of like a contrasting one. It's speaking of the impersonal feature. Impersonal feature? You're familiar with the impersonal feature, yes? From your Bhagavatam classes, or the readings. Okay. So here's a nice image of the impersonal feature. And then there's Krishna in the middle. He's the source. There's the Brahmajyoti. And now we're going to hear the verse. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements. Check it out. Knowledge and ignorance. It's right in the Upanishads. It says the same thing. Your multi-energies are continually manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, which is undivided, original, changeless, unlimited, and blissful, is the cause of the material manifestation, because you are the same impersonal Brahman. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. Now we're going to read, if you don't mind, just one paragraph from this verse, from the Bhaktivedanta purports. It is said that the impersonal Brahman is the distant realization of the absolute truth. Although apparently Brahman seems to be devoid of energy, factually, it has different energies working under the headings of knowledge and ignorance. Fascinating. Because we don't normally hear that. These two energies of knowledge and ignorance are operating within the Brahmajyoti. On account of these different energies, there is continually a manifestation of vidya and avidya. Vidya and avidya are very nicely described in Ishopanishad. One day, as you continue the bhakti process, you'll do your bhakti shastri study. You've heard about that, right? Looking at Shatarupa, she's nodding yes. There's four essential books for bhakti shastri. Bhagavad Gita, Nectar of Devotion, Nectar of Instruction, and Ishopanishad. So when you get to Ishopanishad, we're going to read from Ishopanishad shortly. When you read Ishopanishad, there's this verse, Vidyam cha vidyam charyas tadvedo bhayam saha. It speaks of vidya and avidya. They're both, Prabhupada's purport, they're both within Brahman. Vidya and avidya are very nicely described in Ishopanishad. It is said there that sometimes, due to avidya, a poor fund of knowledge, one accepts the absolute truth as ultimately impersonal, but in fact, the impersonal and personal realizations develop in proportion to the development of devotional service. The more we develop our devotional service, the more closely we approach the absolute truth, which in the beginning, when we realize the absolute truth from a distant place, is manifest as impersonal. So let's take a look and see what that looks like. Here's some Ishopanishad verses. When you do your Ishopanishad studies, the book cover may look like this. We're going to take a look at text 9 and text 11, or mantra 9 and mantra 11. Here's mantra 9. Andham tamahak pravishanti ye vidyam upasate tato bhuya ivate tamo ya'u vidyayam rataha. So there's vidya and avidya. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter the darkest region of ignorance, where still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. Vidya and avidya. Mantra 9. You'll study this when you get, you go to Bhakti Shastri school. You get your certificate at the end when you pass. Okay, here's mantra 11. Vidyam cha vidyam chayas tadvedo bhayam saha avidyaya mrityam tirtva vidyaya mrityam ashnute. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. Well, we're covering a lot of material tonight, maybe too much. You maybe should have broke it into at least two, maybe even three pieces. But you like to study Prabhupada's book, so maybe we pick the good group to cover this section. Okay, so now here's Prabhupada's purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that the impersonal feature of Brahman manifestation of the Supreme Lord is meant for persons who are essentially very advanced, but still not able to understand the personal features or variegatedness of the spiritual world. Such devotees are known as Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. Mishra means mixed. Jnana Mishra Bhaktas, or devotees whose devotional service is mixed with empiric knowledge. Because the impersonal Brahman realization is a partial understanding of the Absolute Truth, Dhruva Maharaj offers his respectful obeisances. In that same commentary, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Brahman realization is like seeing a destination from a distant place. So there's some forest and some trees and some stuff. And look over there, you can see there's some residential places, underneath the rooftops. Something over there, see? In the image? Now let's get a little closer. Next, seeing the same destination from a more proximate place, it may look like this. And then you can enter into the city and you can see the people, you can see the animals, and you can see the trees, and you can see some of the details. So, the same object seen from a very distant place is Brahman, from a more proximate is Paramatma, and from up close, personal feature. Same entity from different perspectives. And the Brahman feature may be preliminary. Okay, now we're going to end. Yay! Okay, there's little Dhruva. He's receiving the touch of Vishnu's conch on his forehead and offering these very nice prayers. I put in colored letters, Anu Bhajata. Translation, My Lord, O Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personified form of all benediction, therefore, for one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, he got there. He got to no other desire. Worshipping your lotus feet is better than becoming king or lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. To ignorant devotees like me, you are the causeless, merciful maintainer, just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. So I had these, you know, big time material desires, and you very kindly relieved me of them. And you're maintaining me like a calf is maintained by a cow. I may be totally foolish. This is the Lord now. I may ask for poison, but instead you give me nectar. Describing his ignorance, Dhruva prays for the sweetness of prema. O Lord, your lotus feet are the highest blessing, the supreme result, more than the acquisition of a kingdom. For whom are you the highest blessing? You are the personification of the Purusharthas for those who worship you without material desires. But the Lord maintains even wretched persons, Dinan, like us who worship you with desires, by giving us a little sweetness of your lotus feet, obtained by worship without desire. What's the reason? Why is that? Just, you're very merciful. And you're eager to give your mercy. Vishwanath writes, O Lord, your lotus feet are the highest goal when worshipped without material desire. Although this is solo master, the Lord maintains miserable persons like us who have material desires. That's a very beautiful painting of his lotus feet, isn't it? Very nice. So we've reached a conclusion. The Lord thinks Oh, because he is a young boy, even though he does not know pure bhakti to me, I will give him a taste of pure bhakti's result, my sweetness. That's Vishnu's merciful nature. Fortunately, we have also material desires, but fortunately he's very merciful and help us get beyond, because it's just an obstacle to reach him. Oh, young boy, it is true. You know my swarup. Though now you are out without material desire, I will give you the result that you previously were determined to achieve. Please take it, this kingdom thing. Sight of the Supreme Lord's transcendental form grants the supreme benediction to the devotee. Oh, Supreme Lord, this is Jiva Goswami, you are the supreme personified form of all benediction. Therefore, for one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshiping your lotus feet is better than becoming king or lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshiping your feet. Whew. There's more. Sridhar Swami comments, this verse should be understood to mean, my Lord, O Supreme Lord Bhagavan, you are the blissful, supreme, personified form of all benediction, Purushartha Murte. Your lotus feet, Tavapada Padma, are a more valuable benediction than the benediction of becoming king and lording over a kingdom. One may ask, for whom is this benediction available? Answer, the supreme benediction is available to one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping your lotus feet. Anubhajataha. So now there's the take-home application exercise, which you can do when you have your reading group next. Think of an active obstacle or unfavorable tendency that blocks your progress in serving Guru, Krishna, and Vaishnavas. Write a prayer to Krishna or your worshipable deities. So it's already 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. We've gone for an hour and 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And you kids, you're fantastic. Most kids are like really fidgety long ago. You got a special piece of Mahaprasadam at the end. Congratulations. Nice going. And how about the adults here? Anyone has some comments or questions? And let's see how it goes. Yes, go ahead. I'm just looking for a picture of Dhruva. Yes.
This question is not related to this topic.
Okay.
This is from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, text 3.
Chapter 9, text 3.
Yes.
He's working on it. Keep speaking. Keep speaking.
In that it says, sometimes the third class person in Krishna consciousness has some tendency towards karma yoga and jnana yoga.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they are disturbed, but as soon as the infection of Karma Yoga or Jnana Yoga is vanquished, they become second class or first class persons in Krishna consciousness. I don't understand, what they mean by getting infection through Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga.
It has to do with the definition of bhakti. The definition of bhakti, let me know if you've heard this phrase before. Anyabhilasha chushunyam jnana karma jnavratam. No, okay. Let's go back to Lord Chaitanya. You know who is Lord Chaitanya. Then we spoke about the six Goswamis who are the followers of Lord Chaitanya. So one of those, we mentioned Sanatana Goswami over here. His brother was Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was the next in line of disciplic succession following Lord Chaitanya. So he's way up there. And he wrote a book that describes the bhakti process called Bhakti Rasa Amrita Sindhu. Sindhu means ocean. The ocean of Bhakti Rasa. That was the title of his book. It's describing the mellows of devotional service, the process of devotional service. He gives a definition of bhakti that was what I just quoted. It's bhakti is moving away from those two things, jnana and karma. Anya, abhilas means desire. Anya means other. Anya, other desires, shunya. Zero, zippo. Which desires? Jnana, karma, dhanavritam. So bhakti is letting go of the tendencies for fruitive activity, karma. Even prescribed fruitive activities, but fruitive activities to get, you do something to get something. Karma. Or speculation, jnana. So those are two paths that are within Bhagavad Gita. One can try to reach transcendence through karma yoga and jnana yoga. So those are lower tendencies, attachment to fruitive work and speculative knowledge. But if that's combined with some degree of bhakti, then it's a mixed kind of bhakti, and it can carry one some distance. That's preliminary. But as one becomes more mature in bhakti, those fade in importance, and bhakti takes the prominent position. Is that clear? So let's just do it again. In the world that we live, lots of people are working really hard. That's karma. And then there's some people that are trying to understand higher things. Jnana, speculation. Bhakti is leave those things behind, those tendencies behind. You may start with them because they're part of life, but leave them behind gradually in favor of a pure and unmixed bhakti. That's what that statement means. Okay. Anyone else? We got some online questions.
Two questions from Sri Radhika Mataji. The first question is, you said that the subtle body gets dissolved and gross body gets spiritualized. Isn't there a spiritualized version of the subtle body with which we can serve Krishna?
Yes. That's an intermediate stage.
And the second question is, Is it correct to understand that the struggles of the mind or body are all based on the struggle with the false ego? Or in other words, that the false ego is at the root of all issues?
Well, the false ego is a manifestation of ignorance, and ignorance is the root cause. That's it. Anything?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is about the Lord Vishnu's activities. We understand that, from the prayers of Dhruva Maharaj also, but compared to either Lord Krishna or Lord Rama, from the rasa perspective, not much activities will be there. That's what my understanding is. Is that true? Because we always see Vishnu is lying on the Garbhodaka ocean or what?
I'm not sure what your question is.
What will be his activities?
I'm not sure what your question is. Try it again.
So we always see.
I'm lost because you're asking about from a rasa perspective. Because it's describing the forms of Vishnu, you're asking in the activities with Vishnu, is there some rasa or not?
No.
What are you asking?
I'm asking what are the activities of Lord Vishnu?
Oh. It depends on which Vishnu. He generates universes, he enters into the universe and manifests the Virat Rup, the universal form. Then he enters within the heart of every living entity and directs their activities, their wanderings. Those are the primary functions. In simple language, it's overseeing Prakriti. Maya Dyakshena Prakriti. That's a Vishnu function or activity. And there's different parts of overseeing Prakriti.
The reason I was asking that question, Maharaj, we always see Lord Vishnu is lying on a Garbha ocean, Garbhodaka Sai Vishnu. If you've seen Krishna's place, we see a lot of pastimes, right? Different pastimes, different activities will be there. So I was asking, what else Lord
He's looking after Prakriti. That's his pastime. It's creation is a pastime. And there's details and details. So he's looking after the details of creation. That's his pastime.
Another thing, thought came to me.
There's one example where we hear, in relation to Krishna, Mahavishnu was taking away the sons of the Brahmana in Dwarka to Mahavishnu's abode. And his reason was he wanted to see Krishna. You're aware? Yes? Are you over there aware of that? No. For some time, Krishna was in Dwarka. And there was a Brahmana in Dwarka whose sons, stillbirth, it was the child was born. And then the son just poof, it disappeared. Like poof, disappeared. And it happened child after child after child. Then he started criticizing Ugrasena, saying, what kind of king are you? I'm a Brahmana. And my children, it's not exactly they got kidnapped, they just like disappear. What kind of king are you? So Arjuna was visiting at that time in Dwarka, and he heard that the Brahmana was criticizing Ugrasena and in turn criticizing Krishna. So he went to the Brahmana and said, I'm Arjuna, I'll protect you. And I have arrows, and when you have your next son, let me know. With my arrows, I'll create the structure that's impenetrable with my arrows, and your son will be safe. So it happened. He created the structure with his arrows, and the son disappeared. So the Brahmin said, just see. Because Arjuna had taken a vow, if I can't protect you, I'll give up my life. I'll enter into fire. So he searched everywhere for his son, couldn't find his son anywhere. So we were building a fire, and Krishna came along and said, what are you doing? I took a vow. He said, no, I know where the son is. Let's go. So Krishna called his chariot, and they went through the entire universe, through the coverings of the universe, into the Brahmajyoti, went into the causal ocean to the abode of Mahavishnu, which is really a far-out description what the abode of Mahavishnu is like. And Mahavishnu said, I was hoping you would come because I'm the one that took those children. Here they are. I just wanted to see you. I'm so busy over here with the universes and everything. I don't get a chance to come see you in Dwarka. I mean, that's the only pastime I know. But it described a little bit the relation between Mahavishnu and where his abode is, and, you know, the causal ocean and so forth. And it's like it's a majestic city in the middle of the causal ocean. There's an Antashesha, but it's a majestic city. You can read if you want to find out what the abode of Mahavishnu is like. Okay, set. We have something more.
Amara Mataji's question. Dhruva was a small boy and was not able to offer prayers before the Lord touched his conch to his head. What this process is that a person is able to offer so heartfelt prayers with full understanding? How to understand this? I think I'm trying to understand, how did he receive this mercy?
Through the Lord's conch, that's how he received it. I mean, he didn't have to, that the personality of Godhead doesn't have to use his conch. He could use his glance, he could use anything, but he chose to make contact with Dhruva's form, Dhruva's body, with his conch shell. But it could, Angani yasa sakalendriya vritti manti. Any one of his limbs can do anything any one of his other limbs can do. So it was the transmission of the potency of Lord Vishnu to Dhruva. That's how it happened. He used that particular instrument, but it could have been anything. He's very merciful. That's how it happened. He extended his mercy. That's how it happened. And that's this slide here. Oh, young boy, it is true. You know my swarup. Though now you are without material desire, I will give you the result that you previously were determined to achieve. Please take it. So he's giving mercy and giving mercy and giving mercy. So how did it happen? He says mercy giving because he's merciful. And Dhruva is a fantastic recipient of mercy. He was inspired to give mercy to him. That's how it happened. That's it?
Yesterday I missed a question.
Yesterday you met a person?
I missed a question from Mahati Kirti Mataji. Okay. Who goes to Dhruva Loka?
Who goes to Dhruva Loka?
Huh?
Who are the residents?
We don't hear much about it. I recall reading something somewhere. It has to do with, it has to do with persons who may not have achieved prema bhakti, but they have become purified, and so they may go there. Something like that. But, from there they can perfect their prema, and when the universe is finished, go to Krishna Loka or Vaikuntha Loka. It's not kind of like a stopover place. It's an abode of the Supreme Lord. Anyway, that's the best I can do. There's not much written about in response to this question that I'm aware of. I just heard that being described in a class. I don't know what the scripture reference for that is either.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, like as you said, like Guru Maharaj performed so many austerities. So I just want to know, like, what kind of austerities we can perform when you feel so hard.
Well, it looks to me like you're doing austerities. From the perspective of a sannyasi, what you're doing, that's austere. And maybe from your perspective, what I'm doing is austere. But, you know, each of us have our duties, and if we do our duties with the purpose of pleasing Krishna, then it's the right kind of austerity, not just austerity that makes us feel uncomfortable or something. The practical austerities that sadhakas can do, like at our stage of bhakti, is observe ekadasi, follow the regular principles, and on appearance days of the Lord, do some extra reading and some extra chanting, maybe some fasting for the day, Janmashtami. So on auspicious days, we do a little extra austerity. It's, you know, refrain from something that's of this world and increase something that's otherworldly in increments, you know, in a modest amount. That's the austerities that are recommended for us at this stage. And then as bhakti progresses, one can increase your vow of chanting or some commitment of something. On the negative side, some fasting, extending the fasting or meaning, extending fasting means, like, let's say, for a Kartik month, some persons eat once a day, or something. Or, some, you know, there's other Kartik vows. Here's one that Bhaktisiddhanta did. Listen to this one. In addition to not shaving, sometimes you see him with a beard. So, no shaving. And eat once a day, with his hands behind his back, so only using his mouth, not using his hands, leaning over, so that means your stomach becomes a little cramped, and as soon as you sit up, that's it, you're done for your one meal a day. How long can you stay down like that? And it's khichdi that has no salt. Hari Bhakti Vilas. That's a type of austerity for a renunciate, but it doesn't have to be a sannyasi. I know somebody that's a grahasha that did like that for the whole Kartik month. With it, so his beard was covered with khichdi. And then so gradually over that period of 1 month, then the appetite gets less and less. The eating quantity becomes less and less. You know, food without salt, it's not very palatable. It's not yummy. It's just keeping body and soul together. It's not. Anyway, there's degrees of austerities depending upon what, you know, one is suited for. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Are we done? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.